Okay, just as always, this is an opportunity to really question some of our speakers. Yeah, please, lots of room here at the front. So, as you've heard, I think we've had a very strong opening session. I'll just introduce again, starting with Dr. Mark Lyons. He's currently based in China and is Vice President of Corporate Affairs with Alltech. Governor Brown, who you heard speaking this morning, receiving the Medal of Excellence. Founder, owner, Dr. Piers Slines, Alltech President. Dr. Carl Dawson, who is our Vice President of Research. And Tim Gannon, co-founder of Outback Steakhouse. So, did I get everybody right? Good. Could we start off, obviously this is a free questions. Anybody who would like, if they could start with just announcing who they are and then telling us what their question would be. Perfect. Simon. Yes, yeah, Andrew.
Andrew Mansi, Fee Compounder magazine from the UK. I was fascinated going around the algae plant yesterday, and I'd like to ask what the potential products are for the feed industry that you see and the potential growth in that sector, in the algae sector, for Alltech as a company.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So the question is, you know, what are we going to do with that algae plant? And I'm going to set this up so that my chauffeur here, Carl Dawson, will answer the technical parts of that question. You know, call it the luck of the Irish, call it whatever you like, but to find within 20 to 40 miles of here the world's largest algae production unit, a unit that had $200 million invested in it, and a facility where the technology, both the pilot scale and the full scale, were unrivaled, is an opportunity that you'll never come across in your life. And so Carl and I and our people, first of all, we said, yes, we will buy it. And secondly, and that was the first decision, yes, we will buy it. The second decision is, what will we do with it? But even though we didn't know the answer to the second one, sometimes I wonder then or now, we're still decided, hey, we've got to take this opportunity. Let me tell you what we can do with it. First of all, when we deal with microorganisms such as yeast, we have about 40 strains that we can work with. When we deal with algae, Carl, we have
probably somewhere 800,000 strains.
800,000 strains. So it's almost like dialing in and saying, what is it that you require? So what is it that we require? First of all, there's a major problem with regard to the sustainability of using fish oil and fish meal in the feed industry. In fact, there's a major sustainability problem even in using fish oil in human nutrition. And so we have to find an alternative. Algae is, after all, the basis of a lot of these things. It's what fish grow on. And so algae could, we believe, be a substitute, a sustainable, traceable, analyzable substitute and constant substitute for fish oil. And that in and of itself is a $1 billion market, and we have an ideal plant out there to do it. When we start looking at things to do other than that in terms of enrichment of food, that's the feed fed to the animals and food you'll get, there are many advantages, are there not, Carl?
Yes. And it all depends a lot on what oils are available right now. Of course, the omega-3s have always been out there as an algae source for a long time, and they've used that a lot as the basis for those kinds of systems. But that's just the beginning of where that can actually go, is where what kinds of fatty acids you can get out of the types of oils that can come out of that. The expense of producing some of that is probably still a little bit questionable, but that was the big charge that we received when we started out with this facility. We've already made tremendous strides in enhancing the productivity of the algae and the way they will move forward. So I think the big things you're going to see in the future are going to be oil-based products, fish oil replacements, if you'd like. That's doable today, whether it's sustainable in an economic form. Maybe not today, but as Dr. Lyons indicated, we're going to enter an era here where we're not going to be able to get fish oils from other sources. And as a result, this is going to be a very key to moving forward with that.
The other aspect to algae, of course, is that if you, and we're a long way from putting this into practice, but if you look at the biochemistry, you take carbon dioxide, which is a pollutant. You're feeding it to algae who use the carbon in carbon dioxide to grow on things. It also needs some nitrogen. But then what you will produce are more algae, which are rich in fats, and those fats can be extracted, and they can be converted into biodiesel. So one of the big things on the horizon, and it is on the horizon, is in fact the possibility of making biodiesel. But the beauty of it, as far as Kentucky is concerned, and as far as Alltech is concerned, is that this is one of a type, it's one of a kind plant right here in Kentucky. And so really it's whatever the scientists can dream of and whatever we more practical people can put to the scientists, we have the facility. What we need are now some of the ideas, and we have the applications.
And I'd also add to that, if you saw that facility, realize that the pilot plant capability and ability for us to manipulate those organisms, I've never seen a facility like that. There's none other around that allow us to do different types of fermentation, grow under different conditions. That was the thing that got us excited about the facility when we first looked at it.
For example, sorry, I'll just wrap you up. This is why we're good, Mutton Jeff. We can take an egg, and you could have in that egg all the omega-3s that you require. You could have in that egg all the other fats that you require. It's really up to what we can imagine. But I'm not trying to give Tim, I am trying to give him some ideas. But as he walked in and he had his blooming onion, maybe had a blooming egg, and the blooming egg might have, in fact, all of these ingredients in it, or indeed the steak that he's feeding, that he would be the first restaurant to be able to say, our steak has, Carl, this array of fatty acids, all known, in fact, to improve heart condition, etc.
Okay, lady over here. Yes. Always easier with a mic.
Hi. Sylvia Lovely and Chef Jeremy Ashby, we're co-hosts of Sunnyside Up, and thank you for a fabulous morning. I wanted to ask particularly, we have a great interest in Eastern Kentucky. In your partnership that you've announced with U of L, UK, and UPike to come together for the competition, I wanted you to talk more and know more about where that competition might lead. As you said, it has to translate into jobs. And then particularly, if the food, we think that Eastern Kentucky is uniquely situated to capitalize on the food movement. Our show is about food and community and how those two things intertwine, about creating jobs in the food industry. And that might be an avenue that would be pursued. Is it possible?
Absolutely. The previous president of the University of Kentucky, Lee Todd, used to talk about the power of a cup of coffee. Sylvie, you've often seen us on a Saturday morning, a group of us go running, and we go to this little coffee shop, and then Sylvie comes in with her husband, and we're there sweaty and sticky and so forth. But over that cup of coffee is the power of ideas. And one of the gentlemen who was at that, one of the coffee mornings, we talked about Eastern Kentucky, and you're somehow or other in Kentucky, we're all saying, well, Eastern Kentucky, and they have coal, and they have this, and they're poor, and they never seem to go anywhere. And so if you think about Eastern Kentucky, first of all, as an Irishman, a lot of the songs, Ronan, that we sing in Ireland are the same songs that they sing in Eastern Kentucky. A lot of the instruments that we use in Ireland and in Scotland are the same instruments that they use. They've had, of course, coal. Invariably with coal, you're left with water, lots and lots of water. So there's no reason, in fact, that that water at a given temperature, about 50 degrees, and there's no reason that water, if you think big enough, couldn't be used to raise tilapia, couldn't be used to raise even lobster. Kentucky State University is one of the finest aquaculture centers in the world. To somehow or other energize that to looking for jobs for Eastern Kentucky. But the idea between the three universities was simply to say, okay, if you want to find out how to use an idea and put a business plan together, why not go to the MBA students? And we have found that this is an inexpensive, multi-talented source of people. And so you give them ideas and you say, okay, now go away and research this and research that. So what we want to do is tap into the MBA students of Louisville, the MBA students of Kentucky, University of Kentucky, and the MBA students of Pikeville, but not one versus the other, teams made up with members from each one, and let them come up with the ideas. What are the ideas going to be? We've given them some ideas, but it's up to them. Come back to us and say, this is what we could do. Tim Gannon was the founder of this wonderful restaurant chain. Why don't we make some bloomin' onions over there, or grow some bloomin' onions over there? It's up to us to come up with ideas.
Tim, any thoughts in terms of an area like Eastern Kentucky, some things that might be done from a food point of view to try to appeal more towards restaurants like yourself? Or
any products from Eastern Kentucky?
Yes.
You know, I think you harness the culinary excellence of chefs and you bring them together. Like the onion was invented, and you know, and you look at the success we've had at that. I think if you bring the talent together, which is kind of what an organization like Altech does, you bring raw materials and what can come out of an area, and the culinary expertise, you put those together, you can go create anything you want, and you really can come up with something special. As long as you have the right gene pool of people working to tackle the problem. Chefs are so inspiring, and in feeding, and once you understand this whole issue of how things get fed and what the tastes are, when farm-raised fish came out, and a lot of it didn't work because of the feed that it was given. You change that, then it works. It's an incredible, you have to understand really this feeding side to really find out what the outcome of the flavor is going to be.
Consider more of that. Governor, any thoughts? Eastern Kentucky, what should Eastern Kentucky be doing should Kentucky be doing to try to improve quality of food and meet the requirements of the food industry?
Well, I think they've covered it. Basically, get your best brain power together and figure out how it can be utilized, and don't write it off. I mean, you've got a real leader in Paul Patton up there. He'll get things done because people listen to him. And the mountains haven't been listened to. We listen to him with a sympathetic ear, but not with solutions. And whether it's a tourist center, the mountains are beautiful there. What's the alternative to coal? They've never really pushed the pedal on that. And Dr. Lyons, I'm glad he started a dialogue, because from that dialogue, other things will happen.
Great. Thank you. Larry.
Thank you. Larry Dreiling, High Plains Journal. My audience is primarily farmers and ranchers in Kansas, Nebraska, and all up and down the prairie states. And we've been hearing a lot of stories here the last few months about the Eastern media has been saying that there is no value in a degree in agriculture. And it looks to me that your company, Dr. Lyons, is trying to take from both sides of the fence, whether it's the land grant college and as well the research institute. Tell me about where you're trying to take these type of students. What kind of students are you trying to look for in the scientific realm? And also, what you want to pay them?
Well, we'll handle the last one first. We are willing to reduce the fee that we charge them to really very little. Of course, with them. When you think of ag students and you think of the people who go into agriculture, you're talking about the heartbeat of America. You're talking about people who like to work. If you've had any exposure, and you have, of course, the Future Farmers of America, these are kids who had to get up and do have to get up in the morning and go milk the cows. And these are kids who, in fact, who have to help on the farm. And, oh, by the way, when all of that's finished, then they go to school. So You've got the first requirement, which is a hard-working student, a hard-working person. And we think that's a tremendous asset. What we have to give them, though, is that passion and to expose them to what other things are possible and where they can go with this ag degree. If I was to choose a degree to suit us, I'd be hard-pressed to say it's got to be this or this or this. But certainly ag would need to be a part of it. Biochemistry would need to be a part of it. But at the same time, we'd want to have something on the marketing and the innovation side. Our focus is very much on these very students that you're talking about. They're the ones we're trying to tap in. They're our future. They're the future of agriculture. They're the future of feeding the world. Carl? Mark?
Yeah, I would just say that it's been a very interesting trend, and we actually saw this in the UK first. We saw this story break. Agriculture isn't a degree that anybody should get. Don't think about doing this. It's very low paying, et cetera, et cetera. I think agriculture, the way we think about it today, that might well be the case. But if you go to Brazil, if you go to China, you go to India, go to Russia, these are places where people are looking at this as a major, major area. Food is going to be front and center. It's going to be a bigger issue in 10 years than it is today. It's going to be a hot topic. I think it's really about bringing the excitement and a different view of agriculture and a different view of the food industry. And if we do that, then it's a very, very promising career.
I would also add, Mark, that being Irish and the Celtic Tiger went and died on us. And the houses are still there, 250,000 houses which will never be occupied. But the one area, and Kentucky is exactly the same, the one area that grew was agriculture. Agriculture in Ireland has now become sexy again. And certainly in Kentucky, agriculture went up by 30% last year. So when people say agriculture is not exciting, you know, that's nonsense. I think it's Catherine Keogh will be talking about how you relate to your audience and how we, in fact, make sure that you're giving the right message. Because the message, for example, out to PETA and animal rights and agriculture is not good and all that jazz, you have to have somehow or other the other side, which is a much brighter message. People need to be fed. Kentucky can feed people. Agriculture can and does feed people. And we need more and more innovation, which means we need more and more innovators. And listening to what Tim says, you know, you get those chefs, and every time I go to Azure's and I ask Jeremy, they go, what's your special tonight? Any restaurant you go to, what's your special? And they say, well, I'm doing this and I'm doing this. And they are so creative. And I think, Tim, you're spot on, that if you, in fact, tap into that, by golly, agriculture, in the eyes of everybody, will be exciting.
My name is Daniel. I'm from Brazil, Animal World Publishing House. I have two questions, one for Mr. Bruce Lyons and the other for Mr. Dr. Dawson. The first one, what's the place in the Altex priority for Brazil? What's the place for Brazil in the Altex priority? And the other one, we know that the improvement of the genetics in the last 20 years are incredible. Do you think that the nutrigenomics could achieve this kind of increase too for the production? Sorry for my English.
No,
perfect.
I wish my Portuguese was as good as yours. I'll handle the first one, let Carl handle the relationship between genetics and nutrition. Brazil has always been a very special place for us. Mark, how many years did you spend there?
Five.
So Mark spent 5 years there and helped us build a plant near Maringá. And, of course, we have another plant in Curitiba. What we found in Brazil is that the people wanted to go into agriculture. And what we found in Brazil was, of course, almost unlimited raw materials. So we see that continuing. Brazil is still the powerhouse, as far as we're concerned, for Alltech Latin America. It's one of our biggest markets. And it's certainly, in terms of dollars and cents, one of the markets that we put the most capital into and will continue. Any comments, Mark?
Yeah, I would just say, I mean, we talk about this. We have 10 people, 10 vice presidents of the company. Four of us speak Portuguese. So I think that tells the story. We see one of the major issues that we're going to be facing 2030 beyond is water. Brazil has water in abundance that nobody else has, and that is going to be a critical thing. Brazil is the country, I think, that is in that driver's seat as a food powerhouse, and I think it's really how do we continue to improve instead of it just being an efficiency machine and a volume machine. How do we make it a quality machine? How do we do things in Brazil that are different? So it's a very, very exciting place for us.
Carl?
Your question is really timely, and I actually did some calculations last year when we were getting ready to do our Global 500 dairy meeting here. If you look at the potential for the nutrigenomics advances, there are a couple things that are being done in dairy cows today that are truly a nutrigenomics approach. Some of the compensatory feeding programs they're using in heifers during first gestation periods. Some of the things they're doing in those areas will result in something like a 15 to 18% increase in overall milk production for those cows throughout their life. Not just the first lactation, but as they go on through subsequent lactation periods. If you look at the technologies available to us today, you know, we had things like BST that were supposed to be a big boom to the industry. We talk about something there. If they reach a 7% increase in milk production, that's pretty astounding. But they do that at the expense of animal health. And so that's not a really good opportunity. The other one that's been big in the industry in the U.S. has been the use of monensin as a feed supplement. The average change for milk production with monensin is probably less than 5%, probably more in the area of 3%. So if you look at this nutrigenomics approach, this adaptation imprinting type of technology, you're talking about a technology that can do more in one generation in a cow than anything we've done in the last 50 years. Now, genetic changes in cattle have probably doubled milk production over the last, probably 40 years, maybe a little bit longer than that. They've doubled milk production. About 50% of that is attributed to genetic changes. Other are management changes such as heat, stress, control, and things like that. So in terms of the potential for this, yes, the potential is as big as the genetic changes that have been bred into animals with these types of technologies. And I think that's the thing that should get everybody's attention is that, you know, you're talking about something here that can be pretty much natural type feeding programs, but just by regulating things at very specific times during the life phase, you have a lot of control over those animals.
What would that do for John Webber?
His chickens.
For chickens, yeah. How do you feel about improving chicken production?
I thought you were going to answer that.
Oh. No, you might comment just a little bit on you know, the kinds of things. We talk about a 15% increase in or decrease in cooking loss. What does that mean to the industry?
Oh, yeah, that and shelf life. I mean, all of the elements that you pointed out in your presentation this morning are true, and it almost sounds too good to be true. I'm not technically inclined, but I've been to about, I guess, a dozen chicken tests, and the chicken of the Alltech feed approach is so evenly matched. It's clean. It smells, got a clean, fresh smell, where the commercial is just entirely different. The moisture content is noticeable when you cut into the chicken. As you know, chicken doesn't have a whole lot of flavor to compare. But when you talk about texture, when you cut it, it's tender and it's moist and juicy. It's the wave of the future. I'm excited about it. Chicken is 40% of all protein. I'm excited about that. Now, Dr. Lyons introduced the steak about, I guess, a year and a half ago. It's in 150 steakhouses around Kentucky. Critchfield has introduced it. It's tripled their sales. Alltech steaks. Alltech sounds like a gasoline station. I don't know why it fits with steaks, but, you know, If the Altec brand, and he built such a great name here with the Equestrian Games, it works. He's the magic man. But I'm excited about change in the culture of chicken, because that's something that's more affordable, that's more price controlled, and supposedly healthier for you.
Damien.
Thank you, Aidan. Damien O'Reilly from RT Radio in Dublin. Just, Pierce, to back up what you were saying there, in Ireland at the moment, there isn't enough room in the agricultural colleges for the amount of people that want to study agriculture. So it backs up what you're saying about it being back sexy once again. I just have a question for Tim. When we talk about meeting the growing demands for food in the future, we always focus on the primary producer. That's the farmer. The Altecs of this world, the processors. But a very important part of the chain is the food service industry. What are the big challenges, you know, facing your business in the next 10 years as, you know, the world population increases and the demand for food increases?
Well, it's always, you know, with beef, beef traded at about $75 to $80 per hundredweight for, you know, as long as over the last 25 years, for the last, you know, in the mid-90s, and all of a sudden it's trading now at $130, $125, astronomical prices. So its cost will beef be placed out of the realm of casual dining? Because there's a sweet spot that casual dining restaurateurs can afford. You pass through that and you get out of the sweet spot, which is, you know, in the mid $15 to $18 and below for entree cost, below $15 is really the sweet spot. You get out of that range and all of a sudden people just can't afford it. So cost is a big thing, and cost is about supply, and now the pressures of you know, that grain is being used for biofuel, and so grain prices, corn prices are doubled. These are big concerns. It's just the cost and availability. That's what it gets us to poultry. And poultry becomes – and Outback has always had about a 55% red meat mix and 45% being fish and chicken. So we've always been able to balance that. But you'll probably see that shift balance a little bit more, even though, you know, Outback branded its name as a steakhouse in a very difficult climate to say we're going to be a steakhouse. And we want to hold on to that claim because red meat is just a wonderful experience, having a great steak. But the challenges today are basically supply. You know, the herds are getting smaller. They're going to get a lot bigger as long as these farmers keep making the money they're making today on cattle. So that long term, it'll be good to see the farmers doing well, and farmland doing well, and people investing back in Iowa, and I'm sure you look at farm prices are a lot stronger than they were 10 years ago. That's all good news, because you want a growth. You want people to be positive and passionate about going into and providing proteins to America and to the world. So the biggest thing is cost. The second biggest thing is safety. You know, God forbid anything like the jack-in-the-box thing happened, the E. coli scares and all of that stuff that happens. Safety is the number one thing, and how the food chain we can provide. I mean, we feed 130 million people a year, and we want to do it safely. I mean, that's first, is we want to make sure that everyone comes to Outback, that leaves Outback, is going to put their head on the pillow going, I ate great tonight. And nothing's bad going to happen. I mean, you know, that's really what you want. And my people ask me, my biggest fear is that you're going to get some call. Guess what? Some strange bacteria that you didn't know about got into your food supply. I mean, that's your biggest fear. And thank God that's never happened. And as long as you have people working on the feeding and the care of animals and really bring science and universities and agricultural departments really to bear and to make sure we have a good, safe food supply chain. I mean, it's that really becomes safety and supply. Then taste is what we do. And, you know, that's the expertise of Alpa.
Okay, you spent the last year really visiting lots of food companies. Any thoughts in terms of this?
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you look at the whole chain, really. People are looking for something new. The restaurants are extremely, no pun intended, very hungry for something that's really going to differentiate them. I think there's competition. You've got these very, very large chain restaurants in the United States and many developing in other parts of the world. But at the same time, people want to have a local and an authentic experience. So how do you bring that in? How do you really connect? And so that goes back to origin. It comes back to quality. And I think we're going to see, particularly in beef, especially in this country, you're going to see beef production moving back east. And you're going to certainly see significant amounts in the Midwest. But I think people are going to start to look at this in a different way. Again, the local aspect here in Kentucky, I think, will be a big, big thing. Kentucky is uniquely positioned to produce far more beef than we do today. And so I think that's going to be a very, very interesting angle.
Chuck.
Chuck Zimmerman, AgWire.com. And I'd like Governor Brown, your perspective here on where do you see the fast food and restaurant industry going in the next 5 to 10 years? And kind of add on to that, just what do you see as the challenges that are facing the food industry?
Well, one is the corn conflict. I can't imagine Congress wanting to use corn for gasoline instead of for people's cost of food. I don't think anything is more important, any industry in the world more important than food. Food dictates what your health cost is, dictates how long you're going to live, and, you know, I'm searching everything else to see as long as I can get extended. But this last century, I think the average age was 48 years of age up to 1900, and then this last century was up to 78. And that's why I started the Sanders Brown Center on Aging. I was hoping they were going to be able to take a pill and it would be 120. But the fast food, people are in a hurry, and fast food is going to continue to grow. It's been the fastest growing segment of the food business because people just, like me, most of them have ADD and they're just in a hurry, and it'll continue to grow. But we've kept very competitive prices in the restaurant field, certainly during the period of time that I've been in it. And that's, as Tim says, we have to keep it that way if we're going to continue to track. But Mom does not want to go back to the kitchen. You know, she forgot how. The kids don't want to go back because she doesn't know how to cook anymore, no disrespect. And so the culture's changed. You know, I looked at a business a few years ago and thought, you know, wouldn't it be great if you had family dinner like we used to back in the old days, really the only time the family gets together? But you're not going to change the culture. You're not going back. So the future of the restaurant industry will continue to grow, and I think more so around the world.
Now, I'm going to try to get everybody in here. So go ahead, please.
I'll get in front of behind the microphone or behind the speaker. Ron Hayes, out of Oklahoma City, a farm broadcaster for several states there. And Pierce Lyons, you talked about your kind of your to-do list this morning, your 9 initiatives. And the one talking about trying to produce more food, 70% more food, how would you propose getting your arms around that?
I think my 9 initiatives may come back to bite me. In 9, 10, or 20 different ways. My wife has often said, Pierce, you know, you're the best one I know for getting into a hole and starting to dig. But seriously, when we start talking about efficiency, as converters of raw materials, we are not that efficient. So if we look at it, first of all, from the animal point of view, there's still an awful lot that can be done to improve efficiency. And that has to do with switching on genes on one hand and switching them off on the other hand, but also has to do with whatever's going on within the GI tract in terms of enzymes and so forth. And we have major advances occurring in that area. Indeed, one of the initiatives, I don't know if we even mentioned it, maybe it should be number 10, and that is taking fiber and converting fiber into energy. We already have a plant in Mexico. We have a pilot plant in Nicholasville, Kentucky, and we want to build a plant in Winchester. So we have that part. Then when you look at the growing of the plants themselves, you know, in many respects, we stretched it to the limit in terms of fertilizers. And even the fertilizing systems that we use are pretty basic, and they haven't changed that much over the years. Genetics has. But as you start looking at plants and looking at the feeding of plants, then, in fact, you can have very significant yield increases. The Corn Belt is still always going to be, whatever it is, 95 million acres. Now, it may go to another 5-6 million acres. But we have to improve productivity of our lands, and we can improve productivity of lands if we take the nutrition of the plant to mind. But some of the technologies that we're talking about in that particular area have been with us for 20 years, and there's such a thing as being before your time, and people weren't listening. Now they're listening because we're running out of land.
Yes, please. Sorry, Kimberly.
Kim McMillan with Horse Sport International, and I have a question probably for both Dr. Lyons. I saw on your 9 initiatives that you have a new horse feed production plant in China, and I thought maybe Dr. Mark could tell us about that too. And the other question I have is the next World Equestrian Games, other than the change of venue, how will it be different from the one in Kentucky?
Well, I'll let Mark answer China. And perhaps he can answer in Chinese.
Not yet.
We're paying for the lessons. But how will the 2014 Games be different? Let me tell you a couple of things. We had a very successful Games despite ourselves. And by that I mean, I'm not being negative, but you know, there were difficult times, difficult economic times. We had support of the local government, but we had no real cash support. Absolutely, the local government did a wonderful job in putting the arena together and all of those sort of things. But when it was all over, it was a lot of public money went in there. A lot of people stepped up and said, hey, we will do this, we will do this. And they did, and they delivered. And the net effect was, according to FEI, a $400-plus million economic impact. That's where we stand. Now we move on, and our budget, incidentally, was more or less $80 million. Or I say budget, that's what they spent. Now we move on to Normandy. And Sarkozy, and a good job he did, what he did,
when he did it.
And what about, and when he did it, put 67 million euros into the bank to be used for the World Equestrian Games in 2014. Work it out. That's $100 million. We had 80 to do everything. So they start with $100 million, and then they put the Alltech contribution and Rolex and all the others who have said they're going to do it. So they, I think, are going to build on our platform, and it's going to be an amazing event. We might even, I'm not sure we can afford him, but we may even have Ronan Tynan there singing. But once he now knows there's money in the bank, his rates may go up. So I think this is going to be totally, I think the it's simply going to be better, and the interest is there. Two countries bid for the 2010 Games. One country bid for the 2014 Games, France. 8 countries are already putting their names in for the 2018 Games. So you can see that there's huge interest. Normandy wants to show themselves as a place for business. Normandy also wants to put the connections in between Normandy and Kentucky. After all, we're sort of twinned with some of the cities there. It's a fantastic opportunity.
Well, I'd say just to add on to that, I think, you know, Alltech looked at the World Equestrian Games and said, we're going to put our name to this, and this is going to help us to become a super brand. I actually think Kentucky made the World Equestrian Games a super brand. And I think now the World Equestrian Games, you know, that there's so much that can be leveraged on what was achieved here. We found it quite difficult. We were out selling this to everybody. You know, we were selling tickets at tailgates, and we were talking to every company in Kentucky and trying to get them involved. If we were to do the games again, they would all be involved, not a question. The interesting thing with France, I think, is that when I think of France, I think of food. And you think of this whole event. This event 5 years ago was about agriculture. This event today is about food. And so that's a really exciting thing that I think it is going to be different in France. In China, equestrianism is a growing sport, but I think more importantly, perhaps, it's a growing aspiration. So when you see equestrianism or you see equestrian imagery, one of the areas, principal areas you see it is in real estate. So these new real estate developments are being built. They're very, very high end. There's one that even retains an entire Argentinian polo team. Those guys don't do a lot because there's not too many people for them to compete against. But it's really high end. I was just at an event at the Bird's Nest that was famous in the Beijing Olympics. Big equestrian event there, yet nothing compared to what we would do. And so it's an opportunity. And one word that we sometimes use in Altec is audacious. And I think audacious, it's an audacious challenge to make this really a very popular sport in China. But of course, that's the type of thing that Altec likes to do. Absolutely. So, you know, you've got the car, the kids are going to the right school. What's next? Horses.
Good afternoon. I am from a magazine that is provided in Central America, and we are producing to export to Asia, to South America, to Europe, but we cannot are producing the enough amount that is demanded for the arrangements on all the things that the governments and negotiation. So there's any plans from Altec to invest the plans in all this, giving all this enormous, this enormous invest of the research in Central America?
I think the question is, are we going to invest in Central America in terms of research? And I'm going to ask Carl to share with you a program that we have where we reach out and we have cooperation between universities, and Central America is in that, I believe.
Yeah, one of the things that we've initiated, that if you look at Altec and if we project our growth in the next 5 years, we're talking about quadrupling the size of the company. We'll never quadruple the size of my research team to do that. So one of the ways we're looking at doing that is putting together research alliance programs. And we've got a number of these already set up around the world. They started here in the University of Kentucky, but we're starting to spread out a little bit. We've got activities going on in China and in Norway. There's activities in Spain that are underway right now. We're looking for partners to do that. I have two different conversations while I'm at this meeting to talk to them just a little bit about potential interactions in Central America specifically to see what we can put together. So I can't tell you where those are at this point in time, but we actually do have two of those alliances, and I would suspect by the end of the year you'll hear some announcements on what those look like.
Sorry, could we have a microphone here?
I'm Margaret Buranin. I write locally for Business Lexington and also nationally for a number of publications. I'd like to ask Dr. Lyons for a little more detail about the initiative for the pharmaceuticals at Sanders Brown. Some of our guests here may not know that Sanders Brown is foremost in Alzheimer's research, so it's certainly an area that's needed.
I have only one objection to your question, and that was the question was addressed to me. And whether you meant that I perhaps was the one that was closest to needing this assistance. But Sanders Brown, and in particularly Bill Marksberry, was a real champion for us. And it was he, in fact, who got us interested in some of these neurological disorders. And he went so far as to say that in his 40 years as a scientist in a published refereed journal, naming some of our products by name, said that he had never seen anything like this in his 40 years as a scientist. And it's things like that and people like that, indeed people like the governor setting it up, which inspire people. So I'm going to say that, and then I'm going to ask Carl to give you an update on where we actually stand with regard to our patients and what that may mean for the, shall I say, an embryonic pharmaceutical industry.
And it is very embryonic in terms of development. We actually have one compound and possibly more that are going into some remediation practices for Alzheimer's disease. We're a little bit tight-lipped on some of those to say exactly where those are going and what they are. Needless to say, we have started clinical trials for phase one and partially in phase two of drug development. We have our first meeting with the FDA on the IND or the drug clearance part of that in about 2 weeks. So we're getting set up to do that. And so I won't give you all the specifics on that because until we're through with the FDA, we're a little bit concerned about what we share. But it is ongoing, and Saunders Brown has been a very useful partner for that whole activity for us.
Okay, I'm a little bit concerned about the new session starting out, so I'm just going to take one more question here at the back, and then...
I'm Linda Smith with the Brock Report, and most of our readers are farmers and mainly livestock and grain producers. And I'm wondering, how are your restaurants sourcing the all-tech technology, and how can other producers get involved?
So, actually, it's an interesting question because we see this from both sides. We have restaurants saying, where can we get this type of thing? And we have producers saying, how can I get connected? So that's part of our job is to put them together. We have a lot of interesting leads. We're really looking for producers that want to think differently, that will innovate. Today we found some of those, and they're producing these products, and they're reaping the benefits, I suppose, in a matter of sorts. But it's really... You know, when we think of agriculture, we had the question about the how interesting it is as an educational initiative. That's because I think a lot of people think of it as a commodity business. We need to find people who want to think differently, want to produce something that is differentiated, is exciting and new, and maybe you have to put the effort in to do that. And so we'd be very, very interested to find those producers and connect them in with the system.
Can I add some point? One thing I'm trying to train Alltech is because they're a total entrepreneurial company, and they deal on a handshake, and y'all will go do that. The corporate world and the restaurant business are managers, and you're not only dealing with the CEO. He's not really going to be a decision maker. You've got to have someone in supply that deals with that supply person, or that supply person is going to move it on and get credit for it. We need someone in the advertising to show how to increase the sales. So it's sort of a triumphant type of approach, and that's what we're working on. We've got a person that can deal in the supply area like I do with the CEOs, same thing in the marketing. So bringing all this together, then you're going to see a movement. Open the door to the CEO, they're going to say, okay, supply, show us how we're going to do it. Advertising, show us how to increase sales. And so we realize the approach. And we're getting organized now that I think they've all shown the interest. Not one company said, you know, get back to us later. They're saying, how do you do this and how do you sell it? So that's our job, and we're getting prepared to do it. It's very exciting.
Okay, so just in conclusion, Dr. Lyons, 3,000 people here, over 100 members of the media, both record numbers. Take-home messages you'd suggest from the conference that you expect to be coming through as the central themes and Maybe just concluding remark.
Okay. First of all, agriculture is very, very exciting. Secondly, agriculture is growing. And thirdly, we need more and more research going into agriculture. We really haven't, as a society, put enough money into agricultural research in the last 20 or 30 years. Now I think, in fact, we have to go back. But as a company, for us, what we're trying to do is make this area exciting, because we genuinely feel it's exciting, and we believe that we can build a $4 billion company in this exciting area. It may appear to the outside world that it's not that sexy and it's not that exciting. The reality is this is the area that's growing, and the reality is that we're at the cutting edge with so much of this technology. So long as I'm surrounded by entrepreneurs like Governor Brown and Mr. Gannon, then in fact I believe we have access both on the government side and and also on the restaurant side, and we can deliver. American agriculture, agricultural in general, can deliver what the world requires.
Okay, excellent. So the speakers are here. If you want to ask them further questions, I'll ask them to just stay, maybe stand for a minute for photographs.
Passionate, courageous entrepreneurs that like to have fun and build the dash.
Got.